Welcome back to Page of the Wind. It's the daily podcast where we read a page of Name of the Wind and then talk about it. This is page 286, and the equivalent page in the 10th anniversary book is 274. Chapter 40, On the Horns. After Hem dismissed his class, news of what I had done spread through the university like wildfire. I guessed from the students' reactions that Master Hem was not particularly well-loved. As I sat on a stone bench outside the mews, passing students smiled in my direction. Others waved or gave laughing thumbs up. While I enjoyed the notoriety, a cold anxiety was slowly growing in my gut. I'd made an enemy of one of the nine masters. I needed to know how much trouble I was in. Dinner in the mess was brown bread with butter, stew, and beans. Manet was there, his wild hair making him look like a great white wolf. Simon and Savoy groused idly about the food, making grim speculations as to what manner of meat was in the stew. To me, less than a span away from the streets of Tarbin, it was a marvelous meal indeed. Nevertheless, I was rapidly losing my appetite in the face of what I was hearing from my friends. "Don't get me wrong," Savoy said. "You've got a great weighty pear on you. I'll never call that into question. But still," he gestured with his spoon, "they're going to string you up for this." "If he's lucky," Simon said. "I mean, we are talking about malfeasance here, aren't we?" That's the page. My name's Nick.
I'm Jordana.
I'm Jeremy.
I love the way that you did the characters. It's so funny.
What?
Especially Simon, who is like all nerdy.
Oh, jeez. So here's an idea to put a pin in. We should just like write a radio drama and do that as a patron episode. And then we all get to do funny voices.
I don't like doing funny voices. Reading is hard enough without the funny voices.
Okay, you write the radio drama.
Oh, I'm not that good at writing either, though.
Just trying to get out of doing work.
Yeah, where's that essay you owe Margaret?
Actually, I started it.
Amazing!
So there.
I guess we should talk about what's on the page, huh?
I want to talk about the food.
Okay.
I always wonder, like, why is the food so much more delicious sounding in these books? And I noticed that this food is an alliteration, and I wonder, maybe is the other food an alliteration? Is that why it sounds delicious?
Maybe. Maybe it's something about having lived in Quoth's head for so long and seeing him starve and feeling him starve. Because, I mean, even on the page, it's just simple. It's just very simply put out there. Brown bread with butter, stew, and beans. And I agree with you, though. I think it does sound particularly delicious.
Well, those are all things that we have probably all eaten. Whereas, like, I can't say that I've ever had a lamprey pie.
Or would you, given the chance?
I might try it. But I think it's also worth, like, you also bring up another point, is, like, in other fantasy books, often when food is being described, it's, like, fancy food for rich people who, like, haven't starved. And so, like, you know, we don't really care as much that Tyrion Lannister's enjoying a nice meal, because he's rich, he has nice meals all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, it means more to Quoth, right?
Yeah.
And so it means more to us, the reader.
Maybe it's that Quoth lists all the food in, not detail, but he never misses a dish. You know, he says mm-hmm. it's brown bread with butter, stew, and beans. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. he's everything is there. He doesn't just say, we had a nice dinner that included, you know, and I had some bread. Mm-hmm. He's very specific all the time.
I also really like that. I don't know what the name for this particular kind of phrase is, but when the writer has a tongue-in-cheek description of what the characters are doing. So in this case, it's Simon and Savoy groused idly about the food, making grim speculations, which is like the author inserting their own like impressions of the characters a little bit. Anyway, that just always makes me laugh.
Well, it also is, it's an impression of what the subject of their conversation is, without actually covering the conversation.
Yeah.
From the phrase grim speculation, we get a sense that they're joking about, like, oh, it's probably human meat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I heard that student who dropped out, he's actually in the stew, you know.
Yeah.
You get a sense of that conversation without actually hearing the conversation.
And it allows us, the reader, to fill the blanks in a little bit. And, like, you know, the funny conversation they're having is, in my head, is probably funnier than
anything Rothfuss could have written. Yeah.
He's making me do the work for him.
Mm-hmm. That's the real genius of being a genius author.
I can't words right now.
I have a thing.
Okay, go ahead.
They do thumbs up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another cultural commonality, the thumbs up.
The thumbs up, yeah. So, I wish I had done a bit of research ahead of time, but as I understand it, the thumbs up as we know it can be traced to gladiatorial combat.
Oh, like yes. the Roman, kill, like, live or die.
Yes, although apparently the actual gesture was a thumbs down to indicate live.
Oh.
Yeah, uh-huh. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, basically, I wasted your time by bringing that
no,
up.
No, that is what I have also heard.
I use the thumbs up at work a lot because in our production area, it's really loud. And when I'm like, oh, does so-and-so, like, need anything from me? I just give them a thumbs up. And if they nod, then I know mm-hmm. that, like, everything's fine. But I always had thought, like, oh, like, maybe they aren't the kind of people who use thumbs up or something. Well, but like, I guess everyone knows what a thumbs up means.
Well, but not, like, those sorts of gestures are culturally specific. Like, not everyone, you know, in some cultures, for example, nodding your head up and down, which in Western culture means yes, means no.
Oh,
and shaking your head from side to side means yes.
That would be so confusing.
Yes.
So not all these gestures are universal. And I think of the thumbs up as being a fairly contemporary one. Now, I have pulled up the Wikipedia page for the thumb gesture. So we can quickly dive in. There are a few theories as to the origin. One of them is that it is natural behavior. And it is a mutual celebration of having opposable thumbs.
You got one? I've got one. Yeah.
Go thumbs.
Do apes do it?
They have been observed doing it. However, it has been suggested that the apes may simply be imitating humans.
Right. It's not clear if they're doing it of their own volition.
That's right. Another perceived origin is indeed ancient Rome, the gladiatorial combat, the thumbs up or thumbs down to be spared or killed. Another one. Hang on. According to Anthony Corbet, a classical studies professor who researched the practice, thumbs up signaled killing the gladiator while, quote, a closed fist with a wraparound thumb meant sparing him.
Right.
Another proposed origin is in the Middle Ages. It's been suggested that the thumbs up was a signal from English archers preparing for battle that all was well with their bow and they're ready to fight.
Ah.
So those are the three proposed origins.
Cool.
Interesting.
Today
we learned...
That makes me wonder if other hand gestures that we think of as universal are universal in the world of Temerant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you could go on. I mean, I think the only truly universal one is the open hand greeting.
Like the hello wave?
Essentially the hello wave, yeah. And there's a number of theories as to why that is recognized by almost all cultures as a greeting.
Interesting. Wow, yeah, I'd never thought about that until just now, that like everybody waves hello or does something like that.
Yeah, cool. The theory I like is that it's like a showing that you're not holding a weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like Savoy's turn of phrase, you've got a great weighty pair on you. Delights me because it is familiar and identifiable but fresh. You know?
Yeah, like it's a different way of saying
you got a pair on you, you got big brass ones.
It's also kind of funny hearing it from Savoy.
Yes.
Who we think of being a fancy gent.
Yes. But as we all know, a gentleman's dignity is in his purse. yes.
Call back. So, Quoth needs to know how much trouble he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, as a reader, like, it's obvious that he needs to know that. But at the same time, I'm really glad that it's on the page. Because it lets us know that he's as worried as we are.
Yes, Quoth is not so reckless that he doesn't know that he has crossed some kind of line.
Yeah.
He just doesn't know how bad it is.
Yeah.
And I also like that he tells us that that feeling is at odds with him enjoying being notorious. Quoth likes the attention of, like, you know, being the guy who thumbed his nose at the master that everybody hates.
Mm-hmm. And the amount of trouble he is in can be summed up by the great word at the bottom of this page, malfeasance. And it sounds like everybody but Quoth already knows what malfeasance is.
Mm-hmm.
I also wrote down my note as to see if it meant the same thing in real life, which it essentially does.
Yes, yeah. So we looked it up. Malfeasance is a real word in English, and it means wrongdoing, especially by a public official. It is not a common word, and in Kingkiller, it takes on the additional meaning of wrongdoing by an arcanist, or using
sympathy for bad.
For evil.
So it's got a more specific technical meaning.
Yes, and I recall... many, many episodes ago, we were struggling to remember what this word was.
Mm-hmm.
Evil sympathy. And it is indeed
malfeasance.
From the Latin.
Which is funny because Latin, as far as we know, is not a language in Temerant.
Have we talked about this yet on the podcast? Like the words that have real world origins?
Yeah, we have talked
about
that. You're closing quite a big door if you refuse to use words that
That originate in Latin?
Yeah. Or all words in any language originated in...
other languages.
Yeah.
I would be very interested to see someone attempt to write a fantasy novel in the constructed language of English, which is a bunch of nerds imagined what the English language would be like without the influence of Latin. So it's taking all the grammatical rules and words that we know from Saxon and pre-Latin languages. So, for example, the R word for the study of birds is ornithology. The English word for that would be bird lore, which is way cooler. And like there is like an English dictionary out there, and I would be very interested to see someone, just as an experiment, try to write a fantasy novel.
It's an interesting project, but it's taken on some unfortunate connotations in light of the
A minority of psychotics who are like racially exclusionary and use it as an excuse to, I mean, they have a racial problem with the Romans, I guess. It's super dumb, but the project itself has no sinister connotation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bunch of language nerds having fun. So
English.
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I am out of things. I did not have a lot of things.
Well, this page is leading up to a lot. We have quite a long letter, so let's leap into it. This letter is from James. I think this is our first letter from this particular James.
Can we call him James Bond?
Him whatever you
want. Want nicknames. I just love nicknames. Well, it's not book related, though.
It'll come organically.
Okay.
James writes, "Hi, all. I've been listening to the show since episode one. Overall, I enjoy listening to each of you, from Jeremy's stoic take on verbatim reading, Nick's crackpot theories, and Jordana's artistic POV.
Yay!
I am writing today to dispel Nick's theory that the university is built on the ruins of Mir Tirinio. Scarpi describes Mir Tirinio as protected by the mountains. He, that is Celatos, kept watch over the mountain passes leading to his beloved city. Looking at the map, either one, there are three of them, one can see indications of mountains, however, none are terribly near the university. The last line of the poem Arladin tries to remember is, Greystone leads to something, something L. It also states that standing stone by old road is the way to lead you ever deeper into Fae. It seems to me, the old road being referred to is the Great Stone Road. At one end of the Great Stone Road is Imra, at the other end is the foot of the Stormwall Mountains. It seems to me that Mir Tirinio lies at this latter end of the Great Stone Road. I would guess that Imra and the university lie on the ruins of the twin cities of Marilla and Morella. It would certainly be interesting if all the cities named in Scarpi's story lay on or near the Great Stone Road. Antis sounds like Atur, and Emlyn sounds like Annalyn. Tenusa is Tinue. This just leaves Balin and Verate. In the letter that Quoth writes to Ambrose, the address of the university is in Bellany Baron. I would also like to point out something I think you missed related to Tellu. From Scarpi's other story, we see Tellu and eight other Ruakh transformed into what I like to refer to as angels because of the wings. You collectively notice that Quoth may have encountered an angel while dying in the streets of Tarbien. Quote, in my delirium, I imagined death in the form of a great bird with wings of fire and shadow. I posit the angels are what drive the Chandrian away from Quoth's first encounter with them. First, Quoth states, a feeling of being watched full at my attention. In multiple places, Tellu is referred to as being watchful. Second, Scarpi's second story states you must punish or reward only what you yourself witness from this day forth. The murder of a Rutshroop seems to qualify for this. I also posit Tellu and the transformed Ruakh are who Haliax refers to as singers. Quote, who keeps you safe from the Emir, the singers, the Sitha? Because of this line in Scarpi's second story. Quote, the fire filled their mouths and they sang songs of power.
Ah!
Oh.
Thank you for writing, James. To refer back to the initial theory about the university on the ruins of Mir Tirinio, you're probably right. To take that story literally, or to take that theory literally, is probably a bit much. I think it's better supported that the university is built on the ruins of Belen, because it's in Bellany Baron. I'm coming around to the notion that all of the stories that we hear are ripe with metaphor. And I forget if we talked about this on the podcast, but someone floated, maybe it was me, floated the idea that the cities are metaphors for worlds.
Mm.
And that the one city / world that remained was the real world, or the twin cities of Marilla and Marilla might be the Fae and the real world because they're entwined together.
And did we not also put forward the idea that what's behind the doors of stone in the university
is the staff room?
If it's not the staff room, that it could be a door into the Fae, and that Mir Tirinio is a city in the Fae?
I don't know if we did put that forward, but yeah, I'll buy it. See, I like throwing out lots of different solutions, because if any one of them is correct, we get to say, we called it.
yes, the throwing stuff at the wall.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
As my favorite part of this letter is that realization about the singers. Like, mm-hmm. I hadn't thought of that at all.
Yeah, you've done a lot of really good close reading, and your theories make a lot of sense to me. As usual, I'm unwilling to commit to pretty much any theory, but I would not be surprised if some of that turned out to be true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much about the letter, because I feel like, A, we've covered a lot of it, but also I would prefer that our listeners just, like, have the letter for what it is, and then they can comment too.
Mm. Fair enough. So feel free to comment on this letter. The writer was James. Thank you, James.
Mm-hmm.
And we would love to get more letters from you. So if you have a thought, if you have a response or reply, we'd love to hear it. Send us a letter at pageofthewind@gmail.com.
Are we all done for the day?
Should we keep our house?
I suppose we got a little bit of time, I guess.
Not
quite at the 20-minute mark.
Oh my god.
If you don't want to write us an email, but you want to tweet at us, perhaps with a meme, you can tweet us or Facebook us at Page of the Wind on those respective websites.
You can catch up with a bit more of our analysis and some of Jordana's fantastic artwork weekly at dorkshelf.com, or if you want to jump from the landing page, you can go straight to our blog at pageofthewind.dorkshelf.com.
If you would like to support what we're doing, you can join us on Patreon.
Patreon.com/pageofthewind.
There you go.
That's
And you can throw us a few shims or bits and all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
Or
a whole talent if you're a high roller.
We also have some fun merch if you feel like showing your friends how awesome and cool you are for listening to our podcast. It can be found at vanahini.com.
Someone wrote in, they didn't write in, but they were messaging us on Twitter saying that they're Team Dead Sun, and I thought it might be funny without thinking. I was like, can you imagine doing a t-shirt that was #TeamDeadSun?
I am not making that t-shirt. Not everyone who visits my store knows about Page of the Wind.
I was just thinking about the conversations that would bring up were walking around with a t-shirt that was #TeamDeadSun.
Jeez.
Anyway, we have a
threadless
shop. Jordanahini.threadless.com.
Yes.
And if we're not quite sure about that URL, there is a direct link to it from our website, which is pageofthewind.com.
Yeah, we have our own website now.
We do have a website. I think I need to fix up the layout a bit because it's not fantastic at
the
time.
Colors.
Yeah, the colors
destroy me.
Yeah, Jordana weeps.
I can't even look at it.
No, she stabs out her eyes upon opening the website
page. I'm blind now.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, we really have to stop.
Shrieking,
because
where we're going, we won't need eyes. Enter this new flesh.
I have such things to show you. All right, that's it for our podcast.
For now, you can tune in for a little bit more of this nonsense and analysis at the same pod place.
Same pod channel.
Same pod time, hopefully. So we'll see you tomorrow for another page
of
the wind.